Previously on Corporate Homie.
The Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos debacle.
Fake it till you make it will go wrong.
It was all smoke and mirrors.
If you build it on a lie, the lie will bury you.
On today's episode of Corporate Homie,
Mr. Darryl Cobbins is our first guest. Can we get a whoop whoop?
Maybe 5 or 6 years into my commercial real estate career, I was helping people make multi-million dollar business decisions.
I don't think I've ever had a deal that had a black broker.
I'm a member of the 100 Black Men of Memphis, and our motto is what they see is what they'll be.
I read an article that said you struggle with procrastination. What's up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast. Woo, woo. I got an extra woo today.
I knew you were going to do that. I was waiting because I knew you were going to hit it 2 times.
You got to hit them 2 times.
So we're super excited to be back. We know y'all missed us.
Like
excited. Yeah, we've been a little bit on a summer, what do they call it, siesta, summer hiatus.
Yeah.
Building up to the 100th episode. So excited to be doing the 100th episode. Thanks everybody for rolling with your girls for I can't believe it's a whole 100.
I feel 95. As in the spring of 95.
I'm always drop a reference to Memphis, a reference to Delta. For the homies who don't remember, we crossed in spring of 1995. So that's why she's saying that.
And so, in that vein, we have a special surprise for the homies, which is we've got a guest. Can we get a whoop whoop? Mr. Darryl Cobbins is our first guest. Can we get a whoop whoop?
I'm not sure how pitched I can go. But...
Yes, Darryl. Yeah.
There you go. There you go. I love it. Welcome. Well, we are more than excited to have Darryl Cobbins, and he's not just one of the original homies, but he's actually a good friend of ours. And as I like to say, Demetra just mentioned that we pledged in the spring of 1995 that all good Greeks were made by the 90s, and that's no exception for Mr. DC.
That's right. Spring 93.
Let him know.
Kappa Alpha Psi, Big Money Beta Mu chapter.
What they say, frat so nice, they named it twice.
That's right.
Our daddy's chapter. So we knew before we knew our own chapter. We knew the big money chapter before we knew what our chapter would be.
So,
and the line was the Fab Five. We crossed the spring of 93 during the whole Fab Five.
I love it.
Yeah, and I was the head knocker. I was the head knocker. I was
the head
one.
Knocker. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Love it.
We love them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. One of the best 30 for 30 episodes I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
So we didn't just choose Darryl because he's our friend, and we didn't just choose him because he pledged in the 90s. We actually chose him because he has a very impressive resume. Darryl is a commercial real estate owner, and I'm going to let him tell a little bit about what that means. But a couple things, I there's no way in the world I can get through his whole bio, but a couple things I wanted to highlight. One is, he works in commercial real estate, which in itself for African-American male, and to be an owner of a firm in Memphis is not a small thing. And, his grandfather was actually a real estate broker in Memphis. So real estate is in his blood. He was one of the first black graduates of a prestigious private school in Memphis called MUS, and then went on to Rhodes College, played football at Rhodes, basically by default because they gave him a full ride even though he wanted to go to an HBCU. His mom was like, "You going to school for free, boy." And then from Rhodes, had a number of positions working for the Chamber in Memphis, chairing the board of MLG&W. A couple of highlights that I would be remiss if I did not mention: one of the youngest people to go through leadership Memphis in his mid-20s. I mean, guys, that means he was in there with senior vice presidents, presidents of the junior league, community bank presidents. Just phenomenal to be able to do that in his early 20s. And then I know that this is not going to mean a lot to the homies who are not in Memphis, but in Memphis, you pay all of your utilities at one place. Like, there is no gas company and light company and water company. There's just one company, Memphis Light Gas and Water, which is a big deal. He was actually one of the youngest and longest tenured chairs of that. So give a warm welcome to Mr. Daryl Cobbins.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on, Daryl. We super duper appreciate it. And if you listen to the show, you know, we kind of just jump right in. So we're going to go ahead.
Sure.
And that, you know, Bleacher gave a really great sort of bio. Do you think she, is there anything else you think the homies need to know about you before we jump into the questions?
She left out my MBA.
Oh, she did. Yeah, that's super important. Where did you go to B school?
I went to the University of Memphis. I did their executive MBA program. It's interesting. I was about maybe 5 or 6 years into my commercial real estate career, and I was helping people make multi-million-dollar business decisions. But at Rhodes, which is a liberal arts school, I'd never taken finance. I'd never taken accounting. I'd never taken, you know, a lot of the business courses that you should take if you're going to help people make multi-million-dollar business decisions. And so I decided I wanted to go back and get my MBA and be able to talk the language and understand the thought process of the CEO, CFOs, and those folks who we were advising and interfacing with from a real estate standpoint. So I did that in 2007, literally 2 months after I graduated was when I started my own firm in commercial real estate.
You Ooh. Started your own firm that quickly. I know Bimitra said something about your dad being a commercial real estate broker or a real estate agent or grandfather. And so yep. I guess that answers a little bit of my question was going to be, was real estate like in your genes, it was the family business and you always knew you would go into that? Or how did you sort of decide, you know, that real estate was going to be the game?
Yeah, my grandfather ran a real estate company here in Memphis for 50 years called Peace Realty.
So he didn't like it, huh? 50 years.
And he developed Memphis's first middle income subdivision for African Americans. So this was
when
African Americans were getting good jobs finally and entering the workforce and rising up through the ranks in the 60s and 70s. He developed a subdivision called Lakeview Gardens, which was a 600 home subdivision. And that's sort of his claim to fame, but he had a long career, mentored a lot of great real estate people.
What part of town was it in?
That is Southwest Memphis, sort of tucked in between Whitehaven and Westwood in the Southwest part of Memphis. So,
yeah,
since then, people have developed down there. Dr. Harrington, our former mayor, developed a subdivision in that area called Banneker Estates, and then there's another one called Diamond Estates. So those were done in the 90s. My granddad, it was he was plowing ground, and it was considered extremely far out and suburban back in the 60s and 70s. But it was a great example of entrepreneurial ingenuity to capitalize on the trend at that time of African Americans gaining more prominence and higher incomes and those types of things. And so I grew up around his office. He had us answering the phone, my brother and I, answering the phone, going to the bank with him, going to look at properties with him. So we sort of grew up around that office and the buzz of activity and seeing him literally go to work 6 days a week supporting, two generations of family members, you know, our grandparents are.
Right.
And so I always felt like I would end up in real estate, but I didn't. That was not my goal coming straight out of college. So, commercial real estate was actually my third job after I graduated from Rhodes undergrad. So my mom actually worked for my grandfather, and she has an interesting story as well. She was one of the first female, black or white, real estate brokers. And keep in mind, agent and broker are two different things.
Right.
You can become an agent just by passing the real estate exam. But to become a broker, you have to pass, you have to take a pre-licensing course for a broker to manage a broker office. And you have to pass a brokerage exam that has a sort of content portion and a state law portion. And so she did that in the 70s when women just were not stepping out there like
that.
And
it's the difference in broker and I'm sorry, is that agents get to work under you when you're a broker?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So basically being a trailblazer, you know, running your own farm and all, that's just completely in your blood. So real estate is in your genes. And
it is in my genes. It is.
I mean, you're a third generation real estate guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it took me a while to just sort of piece all that together and really think about it in terms of that legacy and that tradition and honor that was being instilled in me and the seeds that were being planted. But when I look back on it now, you know, it was great preparation and great inspiration for what I've been doing now for the past 18 years.
And you've been in commercial real estate for 18 years and you've been running your own farm since 07, correct?
Right. That's wow. Right. That's right.
Wow. Wow,
that's I started with the Cushman & Wakefield office here. Cushman, those who don't know, Cushman & Wakefield was a global commercial real estate firm with 200 offices around the country. And
it is. I got to deal with them right now.
Yeah, they're worldwide, right? They're worldwide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I started with them in 2001. And I tell people 3 months before September 11th was when I started. And I had these grand ambitions that 3 months later were just in came to a screeching halt. And but I tell people that it happened the way that it needed to, because for my first probably 3 years, the economy was slow. We were trying to figure out what was going to happen after 9/11. And it gave me time, thankfully, being with the right firm, to learn, to grow, to work on a lot of different type of transactions that weren't necessarily blockbusters, but they were good foundationally for me to learn the business. Mm-hmm. So that when the wave picked back up, I was able to click on all cylinders.
Yeah, Mitchell would call that hitting some singles first. You got to learn to hit some singles first. Let me ask you this about commercial real estate. You know, as an attorney, I see them a lot. Mitchell does too. I don't think I've ever had a deal that had a black broker on any of my deals, on any of my transactions. And so I'm curious as to when you got into that business, you know, Memphis is a minority majority city. Were there a lot of, you know, minority, not even just black, but just minority brokers, or were you one of the few?
Unicorn.
Yeah.
When I entered into the industry in 2001, there were none.
Wow.
There were none.
That's what I thought.
And I always imagined before I got into the industry, I just assumed, man, there are these 300 or 400 brokers around town willing and dealing and doing transactions. Once I got into it and started talking to the gentlemen who were giving me an opportunity and mentoring me, they said, oh, no, this is a small market. You know, it's maybe 100 total. And the upper echelon of that 100 is probably a good 30 or 40 that really do significant transactions in Memphis. And so part of my motivation was to enter into this industry and be an example. I was talking to a very well-known CPA in Memphis by the name of Frank Banks, and he started Tennessee's first black CPA firm called Banks, Finley & White back in the 60s.
Right.
Actually, my grandfather was one of his first clients, believe it or not, he told me.
Oh, wow.
Full circle.
And so I was talking to Frank Banks one day, and I just asked him about how he got started in his field. And he said that he grew up across the street from Jesse Turner Sr., who was a business and political titan here in Memphis. He was actually Tennessee's first black CPA. But he also helped start Tri-State Bank in Memphis and was president of Tri-State Bank for a long time. And he was an elected official for a number of years. And so he said he saw Mr. Turner coming home every day with a briefcase and going into his home. And he just knew he wanted to be like Mr. Turner. He wanted to do whatever Mr. Turner did.
You know, it's so funny you say that. We hear from a lot of homies that the carrying of the briefcase is how a lot of people get interested in a corporate job. And so
that's right.
It is sort of, you know, a reminder that like representation, you getting to see yourself.
That's right.
Something different. But we have a number of homies that listen and say, I just saw Miss So-and-so. She dressed in a suit, or Mr. So-and-so wore a suit, and he carried a briefcase, and I wanted to do that.
Well, that story inspired me, and I'm a member of the 100 Black Men of Memphis, also 100 Black Men of America, and our motto is what they see is what they'll be, meaning young people will be what they see. And so I said, well, if I can get into this industry and maybe be to someone what Mr. Turner was to Mr. Banks, then that gives me, you know, a bigger reason to go into this field, more so than just having a great career and making money, but to really blaze a trail and to show that African-Americans and other minorities can succeed in this industry and have longevity.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, you mentioned that you're working on, you know, all different size transactions, multi-million dollar transactions, and now you're running your own firm. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that requires a great deal of organization and focus. And I know I read an article that said you struggle with procrastination.
I've gotten better since that article.
Are you listening to the Corporate Homie episode on procrastination? Y'all struggle with.
I will put that on the top of my list. But I've gotten better since I was quoted in whatever article that was.
So I was going to ask, like, do you have a routine or a system in place that helps you keep everything in line on, you know, kind of a daily, you know, routine?
Well, you know, every day is different when you're in the client services arena. Oftentimes you can map out your schedule and say, this is what I plan to do today. And one client situation can take you off into a whole different realm. But as best I can, you know, tools like Google Calendar and, you know, there's a commercial real estate client management software that I use called Client Look, which helps me keep my deals and transactions in order and understanding where they are in the cycle. And, you know, one thing about transactions is, they're all at different stages and at different points. They require your attention at different levels. And so there are some days where I just have to block out everything and say, I have to focus on getting comments back on this particular lease. So this is what I will be doing today. And everything else will have to wait until tomorrow.
Yeah, we call that the most important task of the day, right? Day is not won if you didn't get that one big thing done. So that's
exactly
that's fascinating to hear you say that.
So, you know, I love that you were saying that, you know, what they see is what they'll be. It's I'm sure you know this, being friends with us, but the genesis of why we started Corporate Homies. So the idea was that white boys had homies. They had people who pulled them to the side, gave them the lay of the land, taught them the unwritten rules of the game. And oftentimes women and people of color didn't have anyone giving those, you know, types of things. Have you had the ability now, you've been at this, you know, almost 20 years, even though you look so young, to be able to look and say, you know, B and I, you know, use lots of sports analogies, and our favorite person is to talk about Pat Summitt or Coach K, and that they have a coaching tree. So you can look at not only their success in winning basketball games, but you can also look and say, these are coaches that came from their programs. And do you feel like you've had the ability to do that now, help some other younger people than you along the way?
Absolutely. I think after 18 years, I tell people that experience is the best teacher. And I look back over my 18 years and I can look at successes, I can look at failures and or lessons, however we want to put a positive spin on that. But being able to transfer that wisdom to someone else who may be just starting out and trying to figure out their path, I'm always available and open to do, and I do it all the time just because I remember being a young broker and just not knowing what I didn't know. And I had great mentors, don't get me wrong, who were in the office and I could go to them and ask questions. But sometimes you want to not appear that you don't know.
Right. You don't want to look silly.
Right. And so just having an impartial someone who's not within the office, a person who you can go talk to and just ask basic questions to say, if I'm trying to get here, what are the things that I need to be doing? And, you know, I've religiously done that for people for, you know, at least the past 10 years or so. And I'm always open to doing that just because it makes a big difference when you can, one, learn from someone else's journey, but then two, map out a process for yourself about where you want to get to and where you want to go, and have that sprinkled with some wisdom from some other people.
So does that mean that you are no longer the sole African-American commercial real estate broker in Memphis?
I'm happy to say that I am not. And not to say that there are 100 of them.
We're still in the
single digits, but you know, it's better than it was when I came in. And I tell people, I remember my very first week on the job, and I went to a broker event. So when you're marketing a property, or when you're trying to just raise awareness about a particular piece of property or deal, they'll host these different companies will host these different broker events where everybody congregates and fraternizes. And so I went to one of these, and the folks from my company were introducing me to brokers. And of course I was the only African-American broker in the room. And keep in mind, again, this was a broker event.
Right. So everybody should be a broker.
Right. And so, you know, I just remember having to answer so many different times at that one event. What do you do there?
I'm a broker because I work at a broker event. Right. So imagine that. They let me be a broker.
So yeah. That's what I'm about to say. I love to use that line, and I'm always like, as crazy as it seems, I'm actually the lawyer.
Right, right.
Like, so, as crazy as that seems.
But that was, you know, I think about some things like that. It's like God snapping his fingers in your ears, basically telling me this is what you said you wanted to do. You said right. You wanted to blaze a trail. This is lesson one in blazing the trail, is that you have to overcome these preconceived notions about what you're here to do, what you're capable of doing, and what role you play.
In the words of the great prophet Young Buck, when he says, you said you want a thug, don't be scared now. Shorty want to ride with
me. Okay, that's right.
Don't
that's
know
right.
that song. That's probably too much for you.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So Darryl, one of the things that I always talk about on the podcast, and we talk about when we have the opportunity to go give speeches, is that, you know, you're not in the architectural business, you're not in the legal business, you're not in the banking business, you're in the people business, you're in the mm-hmm. relationship business.
Absolutely.
Can you share a little bit about how relationships have a role in the successes that you've had?
Wow. Well, just getting into the industry, period, was based on a relationship. Before I got in commercial real estate, I worked at the Greater Memphis Chamber in fundraising. And by virtue of being in board meetings and being active with the board, I was able to meet a lot of great people who they'd write letters for us to get us in the door to pitch the chamber to different people. And so one of the folks on the board was a guy named Larry Jensen, who was the local CEO for that Cushman & Wakefield office. And over the years, before I'd even realized it was time for me to go into real estate in earnest, he and I had developed a relationship, just friendly, casual, you know, he'd help me out and, you know, we'd talk about different things. And so when I decided I was ready to go into the industry, he was one of the first people I called, and he brought me out to talk to his partners at the office. And I think they were interviewing me as much as I was interviewing them and trying to figure out if this is what I wanted to do.
As it
should. Yeah. And one of his partners, who a guy named Wyatt Aiken, who passed away about 2 years ago, he wrote out a list of commercial real estate luminaries at the time in Memphis and gave me an assignment and said, I want you to get in to see every one of these at that time. Well, it's all men. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want you to just ask them questions about the industry. I want you to find out what they do and what the different angles are related to service lines. And he said, at the end of every conversation, I want you to ask them, is there an opportunity at their company? And when you get done, I want you to come back and tell me about these conversations and what the outcomes were. And so I was successful at meeting with just about everyone on that list, except for one who canceled as I was, well, had to reschedule just as I was walking out the door to go meet with him. But that was a very illuminating process because it accomplished a couple of things. One, it proved to them I can get in the door. You know, right. I can be persistent.
Be persistent, so, right.
Right. Politely persistent was a term that he gave me. He said, you need to be politely persistent. And he said, by that I mean you need to be cordial, you need to be nice, you need to be professional. But you need to leave them with the impression that you will not be going away. So I've always remembered that, politely persistent. But that also opened my eyes up to the breadth of the industry. And with every person, I asked every single one of them, why is it that there are virtually no women or minorities in commercial real estate? And I got different answers from different people. Some people said, well, you know, women and minorities tend to gravitate towards residential real estate. And some people said, well, you know, it's hard. It's 100% commission. You have to really rely on relationships, to your point. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I fell back on that conversation with Frank Banks. And I said, well, how do you even know to aspire to be a commercial real estate person if you don't
see one?
If you don't see one.
Right.
And so, thankfully, once I was firm in my decision to go into the business, Larry and a host of other people I talked to, Larry gave me an opportunity. He was, of all the conversation I'd had, he was ready to bring me on board. And I think had I not formed that relationship with him during my time at the chamber, right, it wouldn't have been as smooth and easy. And so from there, recognizing the importance of relationships are the foundation for everything you want to do, whether that's entrepreneurial or whether that's career-wise.
Yes. Yeah.
And my way of building relationships has always been through civic service and community service. There are hundreds of people who know me who don't even know what I do for a living, to be honest with you, just because they know me from being so active in business, politics, and economic development and so many other areas. And so the relationship business is what we're all about every day of our existence. And there was a guy I heard speak 20 years ago by the name of Mel Gravely. I think the chamber or somebody had brought him in. He was an African-American guy, really high energy. And I remember him saying that in business, oftentimes people think it's not what you know, it's who you know. And he said, well, I agree with that. But he said, what's also important is who knows you.
Who knows you?
My mom says that.
My mom, right, said,
you can, right, say, I know Daryl Cobbins every day. But if you, right, go to Daryl Cobbins and you say, do you know Demetra Liggins? And he says, who?
Then, right. Who's like, right. Right. And so his point was that you can't be aware of every single opportunity that's out there in the universe. But by virtue of your relationships, who you know, but also who knows you, you're able to garner many more opportunities than you would if you were just, you know, a one-person gunslinger out there trying to do it yourself. And I can attest to the fact that many opportunities have come my way that I have not sought simply because over some period of time, someone had a good impression with me,
right, knew you,
that made them say, you should call Daryl, or you should talk to Daryl.
Right.
Let's bring Daryl in on this. And to me, that's priceless. You can't,
absolutely,
you can't manufacture that. That has to be from operating, you know, in a goodwill sense, and then through authenticity and making a positive impression on people, which again, brings, yeah, fruit from those relationships, and understanding that it's a two-way street. So,
right,
mutual benefit is the foundation for any great relationship, and timing is everything. It may be my opportunity this time, it may be yours the next time, but as much as people have called me with opportunities, I've always been one to try to direct people to opportunities themselves.
Well, final question, Daryl.
Yeah, so you talked about, which was I love kind of, you know, getting two great pieces of advice with the politely persistent, and it's who knows you. What advice would you, I guess I'm gonna ask it either way, either you would give to your younger self, or what is the most common advice you find that you give to younger people?
Well, the advice I give to all young people is, when I was young, I had a football coach. I mean, young, like 10, 11 years old, who'd pick us up. We'd get football games on Sundays. He'd pick us up from home. We'd get to the school early, and we'd be there maybe 2 hours before game time. And he would tell me to go up in the gym in the top of the bleachers. And he said, I want you to sit down and think about what you got to do today on the football field. And so I literally would go up there and sit down and think about what I need to be doing on the football field, and envisioning myself and imagining myself.
As you looked over the field, as you're looking up?
I was in the gym.
Oh, you're in the gym. Okay.
At the top of the bleachers. And I was imagining myself in the game and doing what I do. And then I'd actually go out and do it. And so I learned years later that superior athletes like Serena Williams and Michael Jordan and all those folks go through that visualization process of seeing themselves in action and planning out their game plan and how they plan on executing. And so when I was young, I always imagined myself at the next stage of my life. And so I remember vividly being young, sixth grade, imagining what we call junior high or middle school must be like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I was in middle school, I imagined myself in high school and what that would be like. And when I was in high school, I imagined myself in college and what that would be like. And when I was in college, I imagined myself out in the professional world doing things. And so my advice always to young people has been, do that. You know, think about where you want to be, what your aspirations are, envision yourself doing what it is that you want to do, and articulating that to people who can help you, you know, adults, mentors, guidance counselors, those types of people, because you don't get there without strategy. And these are terms that are business terms, but it's, you know, you have to be thinking strategically, you have to be thinking in advance, and you have to set goals and have some degree of ambition that you want to achieve later in life along the way. And so I always tell young people to take that lesson of envisioning yourself at the next stage, and you'll be surprised how that informs your actions today, because you know you've got something that you're trying to accomplish at the next phase.
Daryl, let me just say, we could not have had a better first guest. I sent him while we were talking. He's killing it. He's so great.
He's an original homie.
So we want to just thank you again for hustling with us and doing this episode and sharing your insight and your wisdom, and, you know, with respect to not only your career, but just sort of with relationships in general, and how all of that has impacted and played a role as you continue to, like, ascend. Because I'm sure your career is still ongoing. It's not done. And so I just wanted to say thank you so much.
Thank you all for the opportunity. Again, I don't take for granted the opportunity to be your first guest, and look forward to your future guests, and hopefully we set a high bar here for future conversations.
Yeah, we have some, the people have a high standard to make. So definitely. Yeah.
Hey, well, I'll be listening.
All right, yeah, I like it. And AD, we're going to try to get this right, right? Until next time.
Hustle hard, homies.
The All of You Get You a Twin. Get you another homie.